From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Washington Watch with Tony Perkins starts now.
Surely we can all agree no state can be allowed to rip children from their parents' arms and transition them to a new gender against the parents' will. Who would believe that we're even talking about this? We must ban it, and we must ban it immediately.
That was President Donald Trump last night delivering his State of the Union address, where he called for a ban on the gender transition of minors. Good evening and welcome to this February 25th edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Thanks for joining us. Well, coming up, North Carolina Congressman Brad Knott joins me to take a look at the key takeaways from last night's 1 hour and 48 minute State of the Union address. And here's something that stood out. In the record-setting speech, President Trump never mentioned the sanctity of life. Does that matter? John Rogers, senior partner and pollster at Signal, joins us with new polling that shows just how significant the sanctity of life issue could be for Republican voters as they head to the polls. Well, President Trump delivered his State of the Union address last night, marking a potential pivotal moment as the White House seeks to shore up support among Republicans and independent voters ahead of the midterm election. Joining me now is Washington Stand reporter Casey Harper. So, Casey, what were some of the highlights from the president's speech last night?
Yeah, Tony, well, you're right. It's a pivotal speech, not just as a State of the Union, but as we head into these midterm elections. The president addressed a range of issues from the economy to the southern border, but it all comes against this backdrop of rising tensions with Iran and the frustrations over the cost of living. Now, he discussed economic issues like housing, health care, utility bills, the run of the gamut, crime and retirement. And he also made a plug for his health care proposals, which includes reducing drug prices and making federal payments not to insurance companies, but directly to Americans. The president did steer attention away from the more controversial elements of his immigration enforcement push, Minneapolis, while highlighting the elements of his message that have been more resonating in the past, like closing the southern border, something he did very successfully. The president also pushed for Congress to unite behind the SAVE Act. Here's a clip.
Perhaps most importantly, I'm asking you to approve the SAVE America Act. Yeah. To stop illegal aliens and others who are unpermitted persons from voting in our sacred American elections.
Now, the speech was also not without what have become the traditional Democratic antics. And President Trump on True Social today actually responded to some of that. He blasted U.S. Representatives Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib, who were heckling the president during his State of the Union address, which that was a bit of a tough part to watch, Tony.
It was. He poked him a little bit, though.
He did. He did. Always does.
President Trump is imposing sanctions on Iran. You mentioned Iran. He talked about it last night, again, issuing a warning. But these sanctions come ahead of the next round of nuclear talks in Geneva. What can you tell us about this latest development?
Sure. Well, the U.S. is targeting Iranian companies and these ships that are enabling the illegal oil sales, as well as ballistic missile programs. The oil and the ballistic missiles is everything in Iran right now. Of course, this comes amid the escalating tensions and the ongoing nuclear talks, which is why I got a mention in the State of the Union address. And I actually think we have a clip of that for you here.
We are in negotiations with them. They want to make a deal, but we haven't heard those secret words. We will never have a nuclear weapon. My preference is to solve this problem through diplomacy. But one thing is certain, I will never allow the world's number one sponsor of terror, which they are by far, to have a nuclear weapon. Can't let that happen.
He's been clear on that message. Now we have a second aircraft carrier arriving in the region, which is good timing because the next round of nuclear talks with Iran are set to take place in Geneva tomorrow, Tony.
Yeah, Casey, I think he's made it very clear what the United States expects out of these conversations. All right, Casey, thanks so much. We'll see you later in the program for our Washington Stand panel discussion. All right, I want to go back now to the president's State of the Union address and get an assessment from a member of Congress who was in the room last night. Joining me now is Congressman Brad Knott, who serves on the House Judiciary Committee and the Homeland Security Committee. He represents North Carolina's 13th congressional district. He previously served as a federal prosecutor. Congressman Knott, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you.
Hey, Tony. It's great to see you, too. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So let me first just get your overall thoughts and reactions to the president's speech last night.
You know, it was a great speech. It was the longest speech for a State of the Union address of any in history, but it felt like it was about 25 minutes being there. That's a pretty good metric. But what I really took away was the president, he asserted himself not only as the leader of the country, but the leader of the party who's going to fight for the American people. And whether it's protecting innocence, protecting children, protecting folks against the harms of illegal immigration, protecting our market economy, protecting choice in schools. I mean, these are all things that the president was very forceful in kind of delineating out the stakes, not just of where we've been, but where we're going to go. And I thought the speech was resoundingly successful in being patriotic and being forward-looking and really encouraging to most Americans who need something to be encouraged about. He said, we can do this if we stick together and rely on the same ingredients that have always worked for our great country.
You know, I did kind of see it as it had the feel of kind of a pep rally. It was, you know, a celebratory event for the country. There were a few themes that he really honed in on, and I think as a former prosecutor, you would connect with this, but he spent a lot of time talking about crime and eliminating crime, creating safety in communities, talked about the National Guard being certain places, and of course, national security. But there's a reason he probably focused on that. Americans in many places feel insecure.
Sure. Well, you know, sanctuary jurisdictions cover anywhere from 35% to 45% of the people in this country. And the sanctuary jurisdictions, Tony, as you well know, they're not just a passive exercise. They are active in the efforts that they take to protect criminals. And an example of that is if someone is arrested who's an illegal alien that was charged with taking indecent liberties on an American child or selling drugs to an American student, when they get a federal detainer, notice that the federal government wants to come to that jail to deport that illegal alien criminal. Sanctuary jurisdictions will often release that criminal onto the street. And you extrapolate that into the broader body politic, and you have chaos, you have crime that flourishes, you have lawlessness, obviously. And the president is absolutely correct to say, we are not going to tolerate that. And he listed the cities that had cooperated with the National Guard, with federal agents, and had worked hand in hand. And the results are staggering. I mean, drastic decreases in crime of every sort. And, you know, public safety is the right that no one talks about. Americans should be safe, whether we're in our homes or on the street. And the president is the leader who will restore that right.
Connected to that, there were a few things that the president called upon Congress to actually do legislatively. A lot of what was talked about last night, there was some I would say, kind of a victory lap of some of the things he's accomplished in the first year. Celebration of the country. I love to see the elevation of the military. That was a very central theme last night. But he called upon Congress to pass the Save America Act. That's related to the immigration issue. It's related to the crime issue. It is protecting America's election and the integrity of elections.
Sure. You know, we have an extraordinary problem here in the United States that is completely resting on illegal immigration. Illegal immigrants in the country right now, they vote, they hold appointed offices. We know that they have held positions in law enforcement offices, school boards. Illegal immigration has really permeated every corner of the country. And if we continue to incentivize illegal immigration, it's going to continue to happen. And sealing this problem, one basic step is requiring an ID, requiring a proof of citizenship before you can register to vote, and then an ID to vote. It's a basic common sense test that the American people support. And I hope that we can get this across the finish line.
Well, the American people support it, but some of your Democratic colleagues, or most of them, do not support it.
Right.
So I wonder, you know, when most people don't know this, but when you go to vote there in the House, you have an ID card, and you have to use that card to vote. Now, do your Democratic colleagues, have they protested about that?
No, there's no protest about that. There's no protest about Zohran Mamdani requiring an ID to shovel snow. There's no protest about showing an ID to do various activities, whether it's boarding an airplane or buying certain things. But this is one that really strikes a nerve with the Democratic Party, and it really begs the question why. And I think we know why that's the case, but that shouldn't stop us from trying to pass this common sense law.
So the next step is in the Senate, and that's where the president looked. He looked to the majority leader in the Senate, John Thune, because the House has passed it. It's now up
that's
to
right.
the Senate to take this and move it forward.
That's right. And, you know, one of the big questions I have, candidly, is why every Republican senator is not for this measure. Again, we know that in various cities and jurisdictions around the country, illegal aliens have the right afforded to them to vote by these liberal governments. That cannot happen in federal elections. It absolutely must be stopped. And why these Republican senators, I don't want to name them, are resisting getting on board with this is beyond me, because most of the Democrat senators are obviously in lockstep against it. But I think if the American people can continue to persuasively beat this drum of persuasion, I think we can turn the tide here. I mean, it's an 80-20 issue, as you well know.
But, you know, Congressman Knott, that's what we've seen on so many other issues. One of the other issues I'm going to talk about in this next segment is the transgender issue. And
sure.
That's because people spoke up and parents yeah. began to speak up about this a few years ago. And then the leadership starts to get in the parade. So it's very important that people verbalize where they stand on these issues.
Sure.
And by the way, folks, you can weigh in on this. Text the word SAVE to 67742. That's SAVE to 67742. Congressman Knott, just got about a minute and a half left. Talking about immigration, the Department of Homeland Security is still not funded. What's happening?
Well, the Democrats are flailing. I mean, again, they've lost the narrative here. They want to try to obstruct and confuse as much as possible. The American people know that illegal immigration is a huge problem, and they support the removal of illegal immigrants. ICE is funded, and the Border Patrol is funded, and so the Democrats are throwing a tantrum and hurting people completely unrelated to immigration enforcement, and it's a real disservice to the country.
So it doesn't look, it's not going to get funded this week because Congress is headed back out of town. Democrats have a retreat. So, I mean, we're looking at next week before there's any possibility of it being funded, correct?
That's right. And this is the TSA. This is FEMA. This is the Coast Guard. I mean, real patriots who are going without paychecks because the Democrats playing a political game here.
Congressman Brad Knott, always great to see you, my friend. Thanks so much for taking time to join us today.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. And folks, again, text the word SAVE to 67742. That's SAVE to 67742. And weigh in on this. I mean, you need to weigh in because It does need to move forward. We need to protect our elections. Requiring a picture ID, that is not onerous. That is protecting everyone's right to vote in this country, making sure that our elections have integrity, and cleaning up the voter rolls. These are very, very common sense procedures that are being proposed. They need to be done. All right, don't go away. Coming back with more after this. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people
to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth
the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature
and of nature's God entitle them.
A decent respect to the opinions of mankind
requires that they should declare the causes
which impel them to the separation.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
That they're endowed by their Creator
with certain unalienable rights.
That among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men,
deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed.
Happy 250th.
Happy 250th.
Happy 250th.
Happy 250th birthday, America.
May God bless America.
You see, America has freedom for a purpose. The question is, are we living by that purpose today? See, the founders understood we as a nation would be accountable to God for what he had granted to us. They sought freedom for a purpose, and that freedom was given to us as a nation for that same purpose, to serve God, to honor him, and to live as a people under his authority.
At the 2026 National Gathering for Prayer and Repentance in Washington, D.C., members of Congress, state leaders, evangelical leaders, and intercessors from across the nation united as one voice in prayer.
Heavenly Father, thank you so much for this gathering. We do repent, and we ask for your continued favor and blessing over our nation, even when we don't deserve it.
I thank you that because of the shed blood and the glorious righteousness of your Son, Jesus Christ, a sinner such as myself can boldly approach your throne. You said that you help the humble, and we are asking just now that you would help us, Lord.
While our God is marching.
Pray that you humble us, help us to follow after you with all our hearts so that we can see righteousness exalted in this nation and this nation restored to you. We know that it's not by our power, it's not by our might, but it's by your Spirit.
Freedom has a name. His name is Jesus. And freedom has a purpose. It is to honor and glorify you. We pray that we would return to that purpose. Amen.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Thanks so much for tuning in. Check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. Better yet, get the Stand Firm app. Go to the App Store and get the Stand Firm app. All right, it didn't take me long when I entered into the political arena to learn not to listen to the political consultants. You know, I entered politics for a reason, to make a difference on issues that mattered. Among them was the right to life. Now, the consultants in the political class, you know, they said, don't talk about that issue, avoid that issue. I could tell you story after story. They wanted you to avoid the life issue like the plague. And frankly, we see that happening right now in the Republican Party. Well, I thought the president's speech last night was good, and I enjoyed a lot of it. We were just talking about it. There was a glaring omission, the life issue. Why? Well, it's certainly not because voters don't care about the issue. A new national survey of Republican primary voters conducted this month by Signal shows 74% of GOP primary voters say a candidate's position on abortion is important when deciding whom they support. And when it comes to the abortion drug that we talk a lot about here, mifepristone, 80%, including 84% of self-described Trump Republicans, believe the FDA should require in-person visits for this deadly drug. Also, 32% would be less enthusiastic about voting in the November midterm election if GOP leaders abandon pro-life policies. So, is there a warning here for the Republican Party? Joining me now to discuss this, John Rogers, senior partner and pollster at Signal. And John took the lead on this poll. John, welcome back to Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us.
Tony, great to be with you.
So let me just start with that question. Is there a warning here?
I think there is. And the political context here is that Democratic Party enthusiasm is very high. We've seen Democrats overperform in a special election recently in North Texas and Tarrant County. Other elections, off-year elections that happened in Georgia this last year, Democrats have done really well. And so we're coming into a midterm election year, which Republicans hold, obviously, the presidency in both chambers of Congress. And usually, historically, that means that that's going to be a tough midterm election for the party that's in power. Right. And so it's imperative that Republicans do everything to make sure that there's a strong, high turnout among their Republican-based voters. And so as our poll showed that we just came out of the field with, this is a very important topic to Republican primary voters. And a third of Republican primary voters say that they would have decreased enthusiasm both to vote and to volunteer in the midterm general elections if they feel like Republican leaders in D.C. are abandoning or weakening pro-life principles.
So, John, that doesn't mean that the issue that is the issue that's front and center It's, you know, I've long described the life issue as kind of the operating system for the political mind of a pro-life voter. It's just, it's constantly running in the background. And it does give direction and guidance to how they cast their vote. It's not that they talk about it all the time, but it is a fundamental issue.
Right. So in our poll, we found that 84% of Republican primary voters across the country oppose federal tax dollars being used for abortion. 84%. Well,
that's in contradiction to what the president said about we need to let go of that Hyde Amendment thing.
This is an issue that's core to the worldview of most Republican voters, a vast majority of Republican voters across the country. 79% of voters in our poll said that it was important to keep the Hyde Amendment in place.
Are they willing to trade that for support of President Trump?
I think that they would say it's a both and. I would say I think that a lot of the Republican primary voters say that they support President Trump partly because of the victories that he delivered in his first term, and they want to see that continue in his second term.
Do voters realize that the abortion rates have gone up in this country as a result of the abortion pill and the policy of the Biden administration that's still in place?
That's a great question. A vast majority of Republican primary voters in our poll said that they were unaware that the abortion rate has gone up since the Dobbs decision came down. And obviously, a lot of that's because of the chemical abortion drugs that have been able to be mailed out around the country because of the policy that's been allowed to continue from the Biden administration.
Is there a risk there for Republicans that once voters find out that, hey, there's a policy in place that's undermining the victory that was won in Dobbs?
Yeah, I think there definitely is. If you're in a battleground district in Georgia, for instance, or North Carolina or in the Midwest, any decrease in enthusiasm or any decrease in the turnout of GOP voters, even if it's just 5%, could have really a catastrophic effect in some of those key battleground districts.
Are we in a – you know, I've described it like this. You're the pollster. I'm not. But I've described it like this since really Barack Obama, that we are at a place of more base elections where the enthusiasm of one's base is what determines the outcome.
That is the case. And I think it's also important to remember that the party's coalitions have changed, right? The Republican Party is now the party of the non-college voter, which means that midterm elections are harder and harder because the non-college voter is going to turn out when the president is on the ticket. They may or may not turn out if he's not on the ticket, right? And so because of that, it makes it even more imperative to ensure that there's no decrease in enthusiasm among your base pro-life voters.
So where does this issue of the sanctity of life rank in all of the issues that are out there in terms of motivating factors?
Yeah, it's extraordinarily important. And again, I said it's central to the worldview of most Republican primary voters. And it's one of those things that they kind of assume sort of like pro-Second Amendment, and it's operating in the background for them. And they want to see action. So again, another data point from our poll is that 75% of voters across the country, Republican primary voters, want to see Congress take aggressive oversight of HHS and FDA on this issue.
I say that again.
75% of Republican primary voters nationwide want to see congressional Republicans take aggressive oversight of HHS and FDA on this issue.
That is responsible. They're the agencies responsible for mailing these abortion pills into states that many of these congressmen represent where it's illegal.
That's correct. That's correct. And an additional 74% of Republican primary voters say that they believe having those chemical abortion drugs be mailed into their states undermines the power of pro-life states like Iowa and South Carolina.
But again, back to something I said or asked you earlier, most people are not aware that this is taking place.
That's right. That's right. But I think that they're becoming more aware as things move along.
And that's a risk if they see that their party and their congressman is not doing something about it.
Right. And, you know, I don't think that there's going to be like this massive group of voters that stay home. But even
a sliver
of pro-life voters would be something that the GOP can't afford.
It's not the pendulum swings the other way and people say, I'm not voting for them. It's just the enthusiasm level is taken down a couple of notches. And what you've described is we can't afford that.
That's right. That's right. President Trump is not on the ballot again. Obviously, his policies are. And with the enthusiasm that we're seeing in these special elections on the Democratic side, Republicans have to be able to match that.
John, 30 seconds. Your message to Republicans?
My message to Republican office holders would be that this issue matters. It's at the core of their voters and what they're concerned about. They want to see the victories that were that happened in the first term. They want to see that continue in the second term of the president's.
John, fascinating. Where can people find out more about this poll?
They can go to Signal, CYGN.AL, and then also follow me on Twitter.
All right. I'm going to have a link, folks, on TonyPerkins.com if you didn't catch that. John, thanks so much for coming in.
Tony, great to be with
you. Fascinating information. I hope the Republicans are listening. All right. Don't go away, folks. We're back with more after this.
Family is the oldest, most tested, and most reliable unit of society. It is divinely created and sustained. And yet, there are those who are always tampering with its values and structure. That's why we need organizations like the Family Research Council that can effectively defend and strengthen the family.
Family Research Council began over 40 years ago, like all great movements of God, with prayer. Today, rooted in the heart of the nation's capital, FRC continues to champion faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a biblical worldview.
FRC is one of those bright lights that helps us focus on true north. And I shudder to think, had they not been here, that it could have been worse, worse, worse.
The Family Research Council is key. It's one of a handful of groups that I think will determine whether our children live in a country that enjoyed all of the freedom and all the opportunity that we enjoyed in this great land.
It's just a wonderful parachurch organization that doesn't seek to take the place of the church, but it seeks to assist the family and the church as we try to move forward successfully, not in a defensive mode, but in an offensive mode, as we seek to live our lives according to the Holy Scriptures.
FRC is not going to be whooped. we're going to fight. We're going to take a stand. And again, we don't retreat.
You will never see in front of this building here in Washington, D.C., a white flag fly. We will never step back. We will never surrender. And we will never be silent.
To Washington Watch, thanks so much for joining us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, during his State of the Union address last night, President Trump brought up the transgenderism issue, highlighting the story of Sage Blair, who was 14 years old when school officials in Virginia facilitated her social gender transition and hid it from her parents. Now, she was kidnapped and trafficked across state lines into Maryland, where a judge actually refused to return her to her parents because they refused to support their daughter's quote-unquote transition. Well, in 2023, during the Biden administration, I would do a State of the Family address. I actually had Sage's mother at the Family Research Council and highlighted that case, because we were seeing more and more of that. Well, last night, after sharing Sage's story, the president actually highlighted that case and called for action on this issue, saying that we should all be able to agree on this.
Surely we can all agree no state can be allowed to rip children from their parents' arms and transition them to a new gender against the parents' will. Who would believe that we're even talking about this? We must ban it. And we must ban it immediately.
Well, I have to tell you, hearing that last night was encouraging, because when we were talking about it, no one else wanted to. Now we have the President of the United States, and that's not all. There is legislation being advanced through Congress to protect America's youth from this horrific agenda. And the sponsor of that bill joins us now here to discuss this, Congressman Dr. Bob Onder, who serves on the House Education and Workforce Committee. He represents the 3rd Congressional District of Missouri. Dr. Onder, welcome back to Washington Watch. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you, Tony. Great to be back.
All right. So first, let me get your reaction to the president's remarks last night.
Well, I was very glad to see President Trump highlight the Sage's saga in his State of the Union address. And of course, we know, Tony, that not just in in Maryland, but in California, in Minnesota, it is the law that if parents do not support transitioning children, chemical and surgical mutilation of their children, they can have their children taken away from them. So I agree with President Trump that we need to fix that. We need to outlaw that horrific practice once and for all. But I had a guest at the State of the Union address, Chloe Cole, who highlights the broader problem of the need to protect our children. Chloe, when she was 12 years old, began that path of first puberty blockers and then wrong sex hormones and ultimately surgery. She had a bilateral mastectomy at age 15, and then, of course, regretted it all by age 16. She was too young to consent to such horrific medical intervention. She was too young to drive a car or buy a pack of cigarettes or serve in the military. And yet here these gender quacks were bringing her down this road to irreversible harm. So the Chloe Cole Act once and for all would outlaw that practice and hold those accountable to the victims responsible.
Well, and Chloe's become a great spokesperson for this. She speaks out very articulately on this issue, and she has her day in court coming up. And what I see turning this is more people are now talking about it. You've got attorneys getting involved in this, a lot of the trial lawyers filing suits. I think it's going to be it's going to have a tremendous impact combined with legislation like yours. Let me ask you this question, Bob, because there were several things last night that showed a contrast between the two parties, but the response to the Democrats to the president's call for acting on this was very telling.
Yes, absolutely. This was just silence from the Democrats on this issue. You know, and this is an issue that Americans overwhelmingly agree with pro-family conservatives on. Over 85% of Americans believe that children should not be transitioned to the wrong sex, a wrong gender. So why Democrats cannot support us in this effort to protect our kids is mind-boggling, other than to say that the radical transgender left is, to the Democrats' view, a constituency of theirs, and they don't want to cross these people. But no, we are going to protect, despite the Democrats, we are going to protect kids.
And the president called him out on it last night as well. So we just got a little over a minute left, Congressman Anders. So give our folks a quick action item on the Chloe Cole Act, what they can do to help you.
Yes, what your listeners can do is call or write or email their congressman and tell them to support the Chloe Cole Act of 2026 to protect our kids from horrific transgender procedures and to hold those responsible for their harm accountable.
Congressman, how can we be praying for you? How can our listeners and viewers be praying for you?
Well, yes, Tony, this is as much a spiritual battle as it is a political battle. I can tell you I've been engaged in these sorts of issues for a long time, and I and my family have come under spiritual attack. So, yes, please have your viewers pray to guide me and guide my family to that the hand of God would protect us from the demonic evil that is the transgender cult.
We certainly will. I'll encourage all of our folks to do that. We appreciate you stepping out and providing the leadership on this.
Thank you, Tony.
Congressman Bob Under of Missouri. And folks, so weigh in on this. Pray for Bob, but also weigh in with your members of Congress as well. All right, when we come back, the Washington Stand panel joins me, so don't go away.
We have state leaders that want to keep the deadly drugs out of their states. Maybe if these abortion pills were coming by boat, the administration would change its tactics. It's time to respect the rights of the states, and it's time to end death by mail.
Family Research Council President Tony Perkins, alongside Senator Lindsey Graham, led a press conference on Capitol Hill, urging the Trump administration to end the Biden-era policies that have allowed dangerous abortion drugs to be shipped across state lines. They were joined by state attorneys general, pro-life advocates, and multiple Republican congressmen.
There are more abortions today in the United States than when Roe versus Wade was the law of the land. And why is that? It's because of the chemical abortion drug mifepristone. Nearly 70% of the abortions that are committed in the United States today are committed because of mifepristone.
The federal government is allowing a chemical abortion pill to be sent through the mail that wipes out every state unborn protection law in the land.
It's harder to ship alcohol in this country than it is to ship the abortion pill. And that should never be the case.
This is a drug that takes the life of every child. So there is always a death that's involved in this drug, but is also incredibly dangerous for the mom as well. We think that we should require a doctor to be able to get access to this drug.
As a doctor, I think it's essential that there be human contact before the pill is prescribed.
It's not about a national abortion ban. It's about validating Dobbs and preventing other states from nullifying the legislative policy choices that have been made by our states and facilitating the illegal, unethical, and dangerous drug trafficking of abortion pills into our states without any medical oversight whatsoever.
We can simply fix this if we have the courage to do it. So what are all of us telling the administration? You've been a great pro-life president, Mr. President. It's now time to deal with this issue.
We want to protect life, and we want to give voice to the American people and their right to protect life, state by state, city by city, and yes, here in the United States Congress. That's what this fight is about.
Let your voice be heard. Text LIFE to 67742. Sign the petition. Tell the Trump administration to act.
The Stand Firm app brings trusted Family Research Council resources together in one place. Stay informed with news articles from the Washington Stand, watch interviews from Washington Watch, explore courses produced by FRC, and find many other resources to equip you to engage culture and government from a biblical perspective. Download the Stand Firm app today by texting APP to 67742 or by searching for Stand Firm in your app store.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Thanks for tuning in on this Wednesday. By the way, if you want to weigh in on this issue of the protecting our children from this trans agenda, text the word KIDS, that's K-I-D-S, to 67742. That's KIDS to 67742. And add your voice to the rising chorus that's protecting our children. All right, our word for today comes from Exodus chapter 40. Then the cloud covered the tent of meeting, and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. And Moses was not able to enter the tent of meeting because the cloud settled on it and the glory of the Lord filled the tabernacle. Throughout all their journeys, whenever the cloud was taken up from over the tabernacle, the people of Israel would set out. See, when the tabernacle was erected, the cloud that had once rested at a distance on Mount Sinai descended to dwell among the people. The glory of the Lord filled the place prepared according to His design. What began with redemption from Egypt culminated in communion with God. The cloud became their guide. When it moved, they moved. When it remained, they waited. Their clarity did not come from maps or momentum, but from watching the presence of the Lord. And so it is with us. God has not left us to navigate life alone. Through His Word and His Spirit, He provides direction. Our responsibility is simply to be obedient and to be attentive. When we look to Him, we can see clearly. To find out more about our journey through the Bible, text Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742. Okay, there was a lot that came out last night from President Trump's State of the Union address, which was the longest in modern history. I was glad I was on the Central Time Zone last night. But as we've discussed, what was missing from the address was also notable. And we want to unpack some of that right now with our panel from the Washington Stand. Joining us now, the Washington Stand, reporter Casey Harper and the managing editor for broadcast, that is Casey, and Suzanne is the editorial director and senior writer. Get those titles straight. Casey, Suzanne, welcome.
Thanks.
Okay. Let's start with you, Casey. What stood out for you last night?
Sure. Well, we tried to warn people, if you remember, at the beginning of
last night's show,
this is going to be a very long speech, and we were not proven to be liars on that one. At times, it was a bit showy in traditional President Trump style. He's a show business guy, as we know, from The Apprentice, and that was on full display at some of the moments, like when the hockey
behind,
team came
behind
out.
Door number three. You know, I don't know that that's ever happened before, where they had people come in. I mean, they've always had them sitting in the gallery and pointed them out.
Well,
but
they had room because so many Democrats were absent. The hockey team could have sat downstairs.
That was
that was interesting. And for the occasion, you're wearing
I'm nothing if not subtle, right?
Right.
USA, USA. Now,
give the history behind this.
So, yeah, this is one of the national jerseys signed by, unfortunately, not someone from last night, or this would be worth a lot of money. But, yes, a USA official jersey from the Olympics.
Okay.
Here to represent.
She tried to give me a youth extra large to wear. I thought I was going to rip it open.
Well, I'm not going to give you the Freedom Award.
What a shame.
Yeah, I know.
Thought but actually, coming on the set now, we have... Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, behind that door.
No, but all that to say, you know, there was show at time, but pros and cons quickly. Some of the pros for the president where he was able to go through a lot of his accomplishments, which he really does have.
Yeah.
Big wins on the economy. He's gotten inflation under control from its huge rise under the former president. He had gas prices are down. He's some executive orders on crushing DEI. The border is closed, which we were told was impossible.
Yeah. That's twice he's done that.
He's closed it twice. And I think the big con you mentioned is no mention of the abortion pill.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was a great celebration for America last night. I actually, you know, even though that's way past my bedtime, I stayed up and watched the whole thing. Suzanne, what Casey just said, the president has a lot to trumpet. A lot has been accomplished. But sometimes he becomes, I think, his own worst enemy by overstating things and being loose with the facts, which then gives the media a heyday. I made this comment in an interview after the speech that he was going to keep the fact checkers up all night long. And the first thing I saw this morning when I woke up was all the fact checkers.
Right. And this wasn't a policy speech. And I think we've come to expect that from State of the Unions. There was no grand vision that he was casting for the nation. I do think what is so interesting about Donald Trump, and you sort of reference this a little bit, is that, you know, he's such a polarizing figure. And yet what he does so well is bringing Americans back to a sense of national pride, which we didn't experience under Joe Biden or Barack Obama. No. You see that in the recruitment numbers.
We haven't seen that since Ronald Reagan.
Right.
You probably don't remember that, but I do. I mean, Ronald Reagan, of course, in a much different style and approach, but made you, of course, I was in the Marine Corps back then, but made you proud to be an American.
The patriotism.
Also a Hollywood guy.
Yeah.
And President Trump is doing something very similar. I thought the two Medal of Honor awardees last night, I mean, I thought their stories were compelling. I thought that was very touching, especially at the conclusion, the 100-year-old Navy pilot that received the Medal of Honor. You know, you can't see that and not say, you know, that's...
He provided moments for people to really rally around at a time of great division. I think that was the true strength of this speech.
Yeah. So let's talk about before I go to what was missing, let's talk about what he did include in there. He talked about Sage, when she was 14 years old from Maryland, where her school covered up the fact that she was transitioning. Now, interesting, we were talking about this before we went on the air. Back in 2023 at the FRC State of the Family address that we did here during the Biden administration, we actually had Sage's mother, Michelle, who was there last night, here in our building as we highlighted this growing problem of schools secretly facilitating the transitioning of their children. And so when I saw that last night, I was thrilled to see that what we were talking about, you know, and trying to bring attention to is now right in the middle of the State of the Union, the president calling for policy to address it.
Right. And frankly, the optics of that moment, when every Republican is standing and applauding when Trump says, you know, this is something we should never be in favor of, which is parents having their children ripped out of their arms, secretly transition. And here you have a picture saying 1,000 words with all the Democrats in their seats. If I'm a campaign manager, I am airing that video and then before the midterms and saying, this is what you're voting for. People who think that children should not only be mutilated, isolated and socially transitioned, but without their parents' knowledge.
You're so right. I was just talking with Congressman Bob Onder about that, that what a contrast. I mean, how could you be for a school district covering up, facilitating your child being transitioned to another sex or another gender, and then lending itself to this whole journey that she went through where she was sexually abused and trafficked? I mean, it was horrific. And they sat there as if their silence was affirmation.
Yeah, well, they took some really hard stances in the transgender, like the tulip run of transgenderism, and they can't back down from those now. And I think really, though, a credit to you and FRC, because prophetic voices are stoned in their generation and then proven right in a later generation. And that's exactly what we've seen.
I feel that sometimes.
Yeah, you have some bruises.
I feel that. Well, let's talk about that, because that's where FRAC is right now.
Absolutely.
Where we're talking about this horrific issue of the abortion pill that has actually caused abortion rates in this country to rise, even though Roe was overturned. Nothing was said about that last night.
What an absolutely devastating missed opportunity. This speech was 10,500 words. Not one of them was spent on the sanctity of human life. And I have to say, this is one of the rare opportunities when Donald Trump has to lay out the terms of the debate. We've seen him do this with Hillary Clinton, where he very vividly spells out the Democrats' extremism. And that is where Republicans win, is to say, this is what Democrats are for. He missed that opportunity. And I am just astounded and, frankly, extremely disappointed, because right now, you know, you had the pollster on earlier talking about the fact that only one in five Republican voters knows that abortion has skyrocketed since Dobbs. They all think that abortions have gone down.
Right.
This is an opportunity he had to explain that.
I talked about that again in a post interview last night, that when the American people, primarily when the Republican voters, I should say, find this out, they're going to be outraged. Exactly.
Right.
And this is going to affect enthusiasm at the polls. And you read all these stories about the deficit of enthusiasm among Republican voters. Now, I don't agree with that. I think there's a lot of reasons to be enthusiastic. And to your point, Donald Trump in the past has spoken to this very effectively. And in fact, I've talked to him about that in the past. But his pollsters have changed his mind on this. And he sees this strictly as a political issue. My last conversation with him about this was, Mr. President, it's not a political issue. It is primarily a spiritual issue, and we have to get it right. And that's to your point, Casey, that's why we're here as a prophetic voice. I'd rather be a pleasant voice, but if we have to be prophetic, we will, because I think it was affirmed last night by what we saw with the highlighting of Sage.
Yeah, I guess we have a sackcloth here for our prophetic voice, but you know,
well, I can turn it to ashes.
Whoa! Wow! Really leaning into Exodus here.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the president, I wish he had spoken about mifepristone as well, but I think it's very telling that he didn't even bring up some of the more quote-unquote popular issues. Virginia's pushing third trimester abortion right now. Mm-hmm. That's an easy target. Americans do not support that. He could at very least talk about
was,
that.
I guess maybe I'm pulling back the curtain a little bit too much here, but I was in the White House before his State of the Union address, after the former governor of Virginia,
Northam,
made that comment. It just happened to be like 2 days before the State of the Union. The night before the State of the Union, I was in the White House. The president came in the room, exploded over what Northam had to say, was incensed by what he said, and by the way, I should say what he said. He talked about basically fourth-term abortion after a child was born, that, you know, if they were born alive from a failed abortion, we would keep them comfortable until they decided
they
what to do with them. And the president was incensed by this. So, again, the president, as you pointed out earlier, has spoken very effectively and passionately on this, but unfortunately, his political pollsters have convinced him that this is a politically it's a political liability and a losing issue.
And they're wrong.
Well, they're wrong on two fronts.
They're making a political calculus, but they're making a wrong political calculus.
Right.
Because as we've seen in the after Dobbs, you know, 11 pro-life governors signed bills into law protecting the unborn. All of them won.
Because they knew how to talk about
it. Exactly. Yeah. The only time we lose on this issue is when Republicans refuse to talk about it. When they hide from it, we lose. And last night, he had a chance to spell out exactly what he wanted to say on this issue and set the terms of debate, and he failed.
I think his New York side is showing. He's a New Yorker. There's a couple of states where abortion is pretty popular, California, New York. The rest of the country doesn't look or think like California and New York. A lot of these states are a lot more pro-life than the president used to growing up with.
But I go back to the point, and I want this president to be successful.
Absolutely.
Because, number one, we're commanded in structure in Scripture to pray for our leaders. I prayed for Joe Biden, that he would get it right. I mean, that's like trying to get a parked car to go 60 miles an hour. but Donald Trump is moving in the right direction in most cases, and so I pray for him because I want him to be successful. But this issue of the sanctity of human life is a defining issue for the nation, especially after the Lord heard our prayer and graciously gave us an overturn of Roe and another chance, as I was criticized for saying about the president, a mulligan, a chance to get it right. But right now, we're not getting it right.
There's no fear of the Lord. There's no sense of like, we as a nation should be a little bit worried that, I don't mean just for the president personally. I just mean among, our country.
True. There needs to be a healthy dose of fear. That does prompt me to if I had a criticism of the president's speech last night, other than what was left out, would be there was clearly a lack of humility. And I know that that's a part of the show, the arrogance, but even the attributing, if God needs a miracle, he calls the United States. I don't think so. I mean, I think that's getting that's borderline.
Yeah. Yeah. A miracle on ice, maybe.
Miracle on ice. Yeah.
Well, he did have the hockey team there. Right. He had the hockey team there. But all in all, I I'm grateful for this president, and I thought, as the 250th anniversary, it was a great celebration. Mm-hmm. I liked how much the military was emphasized and highlighted. Not so crazy
He's
about the
really
sports.
He's really good at embracing the sacrifice of men and women and showing off the heroes of this country, which are the men and women in uniform.
They
and
are.
First responders and the
Coast Guard.
The National Guard.
The National Guard.
That Coast Guard, that was amazing. To see him sitting there
with his mom.
And the girl that he rescued.
Yeah. In the age of feminism, people still love Christ-like masculinity and heroism.
126.
Something like
that. People that he rescued in that, something like that. It was.
I didn't know it was that many, but it's like risking his life, to be sure, in that tragic Texas
flood. I think that's what I liked about last night, was really highlighting true heroes. Mm-hmm. We've gotten to a point in our culture where we're looking to idolize anything. If somebody falls in a hole and survives, they're a hero. Mm-hmm. But these are men and women who, in some cases, gave their lives for the benefit of others.
We contrast that with giving, like, Ellen DeGeneres the Medal of Freedom or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's night and day.
So it's good. It's good to celebrate those things that I think it subtly points to the fact how has America survived for 250 years? Obviously, God's grace and his protection and provision. But because I think in the hearts of those men and women, we read what Scripture says, greater love hath no man than to lay down his life for his friends.
Yeah.
Give you almost the final word.
Well, last night reminds me once again how much we need to pray for this president, how much we need to pray for Congress. We're in a deeply divided time right now, and that was very evident last night. And I think that's not something God can't overcome, but we certainly, as individual people, need to be on our knees asking for that to be civility, even.
And I was praying for the president to be a little more dialed back. I mean, he only poked the bear a few times.
he did. Well, Casey, Democrats poked back. They poked back. That was also grieving me a little bit, just to see the division.
There is a decorum that we've lost.
It's gone.
In many ways, and that saddens me because I do think that there's a. We can obviously passionately disagree, but we've got to do so in a way that is civil. All right, I get the final word, Casey.
As you should.
Suzanne, Casey, thanks for joining
us. Thank you.
Folks, thank you for joining us as well, and do pray for our nation, pray for our president, and continue to stand for truth.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council. To support our efforts to advance faith, family, and freedom, please text GIVE to 67742. That's GIVE to 67742. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information, please visit TonyPerkins.com.